It is truly now my joy to introduce Dr. Terry Thrower. Terry holds a PhD in disability studies from the University of Illinois in Chicago. She has a bachelor's and master's degree in rehabilitation counseling and has lived over 50 years with a disability and a chronic illness. At the age of 3, she was diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, now called juvenile idiopathic arthritis, since no one fully knows or understands the root cause of this condition. An Air Force brat, I can't see her as a brat, but an Air Force brat, Terry lived in some pretty exotic locations while growing up. When she was not in the hospital for many weeks and months at a time, she was outside trying her best to just be a normal kid. At the age of 32, she became legally blind, having lost most of her usable vision following glaucoma surgery. She has endured more than 40 major surgeries in her lifetime. In 2016, suffering from spinal cord compression and losing the ability to use her arms and legs, she underwent an urgent skull to mid-spinal back surgery that permanently immobilized her neck. She and her husband, Greg Thrower, have had many adventures in their 24 years together, including crisscrossing the U.S., visiting China, Mexico, and England as a disability studies scholar. And their latest adventure is moving to the North Georgia mountains and hopefully finding us. Greg's love and care and support have kept Terry going through all the trials that have accompanied this incurable chronic illness. The title of her talk, which she was so very willing to share with us, is called Unruly Bodies, Embracing and Sharing Our Unique Stories. Dr. Terry Thrower. And guava.
And thank you, Gail. Thank you guys for being so welcoming to us. That's why we're here. Okay. So I'm a little nervous. That's okay. And just so you know, I have some slides. I'm going to be working vocally with my husband to help him to move the slides along. And he's going to be also helping me keep time. So thanks for understanding that. So it's not easy to talk about our bodies. We often don't have the language or the space to discuss what are often or frequently unruly, messy, and unpredictable issues about our bodies. So I want to take you on my journey of how I learned to talk about my body. And some of this you've already heard a little bit of in my bio, but I want to point out some of those words. And the first one is normal. When I was 3, I learned that I wasn't normal because I was the only one in my family and the only one that I saw around me who was spending weeks and months at a time in hospitals, or coming home to have physical therapy and wearing braces or wearing splints at night. I was the only one with a body that needed to be fixed by doctors, and that knowledge of being that different led me to understand that there was something wrong with me. But I decided, instead of there being something wrong with me at that young age, I wanted it to be all about my body. So I separated myself from my body. And I allowed doctors to have the purview, to have the knowledge to take care of my body and not me. I was going to take care of me. While I was growing up, I also learned that because I was the only one around going through stuff like this, that it was stressful to talk about it with other people. It created stress in my family to discuss my pain or my emotional needs or the fact that I didn't like what was going on. So I kept that to myself. Bionic. When I was 12 years old, I met a surgeon who told me, let me backtrack a little bit, I'm sorry. Juvenile idiopathic arthritis has, what it does is it inflames the joints, started in my knees, and quickly spread to the rest of my body. It caused my, it is an autoimmune disease that disrupts the cartilage. It attacks its own synovial fluid and cartilage throughout the body. My knees were bent and deformed, and I walked on tiptoes and sort of hunched over throughout my childhood. I also was given a diagnosis of uveitis at the age of 12. Uveitis came along with the juvenile arthritis as an inflammatory condition of the eyes, part of the disease. And at 12, I met a surgeon who told me when I turned 18 and stopped growing, I could have my knees replaced. So what I saw was The Bionic Woman. You guys remember that show, right? And that I was watching it, you know, it's on TV at the time, and that was my dream. I was like, I'm gonna have my knees replaced and I'll be normal. I'll be bionic even. And to me, bionic meant that I would be able to sit cross-legged on the floor like the other girls that I saw in school, or run up and down stairs, or ride a bike like the other kids. That I'd start to look and act like other people. And that dream carried me into my adulthood and through those awkward teenage years. By the time I was 26, I found a surgeon who agreed to replace my knees. But by then, my hips had been damaged enough by the way I was walking and the arthritis that, bonus, he was going to replace my hips as well. So, so yes, I had bionic parts, but my dream of being bionic didn't really happen, because not only did I not get the powers that I saw Jamie Summers have, I didn't really get knees that bent. What I got were knees that straightened, and I walked a little better, I had less pain. All of that was good, but I didn't get my dream. I didn't get to sit cross-legged on the floor or ride a bike. I couldn't even pull my knees underneath my chair to keep them out of the way. But by then, I'd been living with this body and all of my deformities and pain and indifference for so long that it was okay. You know, I'd started to get used to it. And I was working as a vocational rehabilitation counselor. I was getting my master's degree. I moved on. And that was often what I did. I would just deal with things and move on. At 29, I met the love of my life. And actually, we're celebrating our 24th anniversary today. But within 2 years of that, of meeting and marrying Greg, I went in for a routine glaucoma surgery. So I told you that I'd had the uveitis, and it led to glaucoma. The way they treated it caused an additional problem, And I'd had several glaucoma surgeries to keep my vision. And this surgery was supposed to keep my vision as well, but I woke up blind. So now I'm disabled and blind. And I was like, I have no idea how to deal with that. But I, of course, I moved on. But at the same time, I was, it was 1996 at the time. And of course, the Atlanta Olympics were happening. And I was invited to attend the Paralympic Congress. Actually, it was a conference put on by the Paralympic Committee. And this was transformative for me. I walk in and there are all these people that are disabled talking about disability as identity, disability as cool, and disability pride. Do we have the disability pride slide up there? Thanks. So this was a new concept for me. And the other thing was I saw people in wheelchairs dancing alongside able-bodied dancers for the first time. I saw actors with disabilities. I saw artists expressing their experience of their bodies as disabled people in positive ways, in sort of political ways through their art. It was amazing. And through that experience, I found a new calling. So even though I had gone back to work as a vocational rehabilitation counselor, which is about helping other people get jobs, something had shifted in me, and I wanted to explore this disability arts and culture thing. So I set off to get my doctorate in disability studies. Now, disability studies, how many of you understand disability studies? Just make some noise. Not so much. Okay. Disability studies is a bit like women's studies or gender studies. So it's looking at the experience of disability, not necessarily as just a medical or individual experience, but it's putting it in context of other marginalized groups, like women, LGBTQ communities, people of color. So it's exploring the social, political, cultural, economic, psychosocial, all of those issues. And while I was there, I, of course, was interested in disability as an art and culture. And I had a cohort, a community of students and professors with disabilities, as well as artists, disabled artists. And of course, around this time, my right ankle said, hey, you know, this hurts. So I went to see a doctor, because that's what I do. And the doctor told me he could replace that joint, more bionics parts. And I talked to my cohort, and they were like, why would you do that? You know, this was a radical departure from what I had known about getting fixed. And of course I listened, and they said, you could just use a wheelchair. But I was blind, and I was, and you know, fiercely independent, wanted my mobility, and in fact had just applied to receive this beautiful guide dog that I use. And so I was like, how? How do you deal with being blind and in a wheelchair? It was as if they couldn't see me or hear me or experience my, what I was dealing with. And so even in that kind of situation, it's hard to talk about our bodies. And it's hard for people, even though they share similar experience, to even enter that space and empathize with difference in that way. I'm gonna switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit more about disability studies, which borrows a lot from other social movements, including the LGBT community. And they borrow the term coming out. Now, sometimes coming out as disabled sounds a little off, sounds a little strange. So let me explain. This is Techie on the screen. Techie is an artist. She's a dwarf, a little person, 3.5 feet tall, and she's using her crutches, so she also has a disability. But she's not gay. In the course of getting my dissertation, finishing my dissertation, I was working with artists, several artists with disabilities. She was one of them. And she did a performance about coming out as a little person and a disabled person, and I was so puzzled. I was like, it's obvious why. When I talked to her about it, why would you need to do that? And she explained that it was about claiming her identity for herself, you know, sort of making sure that she publicly stated, this is who I am. And in doing that, she claimed her community in a way that says, I'm also part of little people and disabled people. And at the same time, in front of this audience, she was saying, and it's okay to talk about it. Let's talk about it. You can talk about this thing, that this elephant in the room, and we can talk together about our bodies. By the time I completed the PhD program, I was feeling pretty good about accepting myself as a disabled and blind woman with a doctorate, and I was ready to step into my role as a professor of disability studies. And then my body said, hello, as it usually did. You heard a little bit about the spinal cord compression. And it was within months of my receiving my PhD that I started to have symptoms of numbness and tingling in my hands. I was falling a lot. I was having weakness and terrible pain and barely able to function. And the choices were, when I went to see a surgeon, because of course that's what you do, that I could stay like that and probably die within a year or two, first becoming quadriplegic, or have this surgery that completely would immobilize my neck and further reduce my visual field, my ability to sort of compensate for my low vision and my blindness by using my neck, further limit my energy, but I might live. There was still a risk of quadriplegia and death for the surgery, but life was also possible, and so of course we chose that. It's still not easy for me to talk about that. So I think my neck was up there. And now I want you to see my bionic self. Yes? The bionic self. This is all my replaced parts. When I saw this, that too was rather transformative. It sort of said, wow, I've been through a hell of a lot with my body. There's a lot to talk about, but I'm able to function. I'm able to contribute. I'm able to be before you, and I'm so grateful to have another chance at life. I'm so grateful to be able to share my story with you and hopefully come out in a way that invites others to share their stories about their bodies. I've heard wonderful stories up here in the Joys and Concerns today about people's pain, their loved ones, difficulties, disabilities, injuries. We all go through it. We all know about it. But it's often hard to talk about, and it's often still so marginalized that we don't even include it in when we start talking about race, gender, sexuality. it's left off the table. Disability and illness and pain is often left out, but it's so prevalent in our lives. And so one of the things I wanted to leave you with is this quote from Neil Marcus. We have that one?
Yeah.
That disability is not a brave struggle, is that the first one?
Yeah.
Or courage in the face of adversity. Disability is an art. It is an ingenious way to live. And I would suggest that all of living is ingenious. I hope I've opened up the space enough for us to have more discussion about this. And I'm absolutely happy to take questions, try to clarify, and thank you so much.